I want to talk about, we've never talked about this, and it's extremely important from what where we are. And that's what it means, what the first fruit thing is, and what the counting of the Omer means. Go to Leviticus 23, verse 9. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, When you be come into the land which I give unto you, and you shall reap the harvest thereof, then you shall bring a sheaf of the first fruits of your harvest unto the priest, and he shall wave the sheaf before the Lord to be accepted for you. On the morrow after the Sabbath the priest shall wave it. And you shall offer that day, when you wave the sheaf, a he-lamb without blemish of the first year for a burnt offering unto the Lord. And the meat offering thereof shall be 2/10 deals of fine flour mingled with oil, an offering made by fire unto the Lord for a sweet savor. And the drink offering shall be of wine, the fourth part of a hin. And you shall eat neither bread nor parched corn nor green ears until the selfsame day that you have brought an offering unto your God. It shall be a statute forever throughout your generations in all your dwellings. And you shall count unto you from the morrow after the Sabbath, from the day that you brought the sheaf of the wave offering, 7 Sabbaths shall be complete. Even unto the morrow after the 7th Sabbath shall you number 50 days. And you shall offer a new meat offering unto the Lord. Now, one of the reasons that stealth is still meeting is so that you know what all that means. Why it's a peace offering, a meal offering, a drink offering, and what its connection is to Passover and Pentecost. We've never studied the counting of the Omer, and what that means, and why it's so significant, and what took place during those 50 days. And that's what we're going to study tonight, hopefully so that you can share it with the people in your Bible studies. Remember, at the end of the Haggadah, there's the first two nights, the first counting of the first night and the second night. Well, then there are 49 or 47 other countings. There are a total of 49 days that must be accounted. And in the law, I mean, in the Mishnah, it says that you must count them by a particular manner. It must be spoken verbally, and a blessing must accompany it. If you fail to count the Omer in a 24-hour period, you cannot partake of Pentecost. And we'll get into what that means in a minute. The Omer became the name of the period between Passover and Pentecost. Nothing new of the land, nothing can be eaten except that wave offering is accepted by God. If that wave offering on the Feast of First Fruits was not accepted by God, then Israel would have starved to death because they couldn't eat anything new from the land. At the instant, remember, we've gone through it before, and I'll do it again if you want me to, but of what exactly is Joseph of Arimathea and Nicodemus were taking Christ off the cross and burying him in the tomb, at that same instant, another throng of people were doing this ceremony of cutting down the first fruit offering, which would be offered 72 hours or 3 days and 3 nights later. And we've gone through in the past years showing why that morrow after the Sabbath, which defined the first fruit, the day of the first fruit, was a movable feast, how the odds of it happening where Christ fulfilled all those feasts was like 1 billion to 1. But And you can listen to the tapes or do all kinds of stuff if you want to, or we can talk to me privately if you don't remember it. But what I want to concentrate on tonight is this counting of the Omer and the things that took place in that.
The Omer is just a name of the particular time.
The Omer is a Hebrew word that's not a translation, it's a transliteration. Omer is the Hebrew word itself. And it simply, in English, it means a sheaf. Like if you took a bunch of wheat and cut it off, that's a sheaf. And the Omer was of a particular weight. Now, in order to understand about 10 jillion things in the scriptures, you have to understand that the first fruit offering at Passover was a barley offering. And you have to understand the only time that that first fruit offering was made, and the only time barley is talked about, any time barley is talked about in the Bible, it's in connection with this Passover first fruit offering. You got it? Okay, maybe you will get it better. Well, let me quickly review the notes that we from this is reviewed, so. The bread which had originally been the bread of affliction in Deuteronomy 16, because of this first fruit offering, has now become the bread of the new state of existence. None of Egypt's leaven was to pervade it. They were to be a new lump as they were unleavened. The 49 days, as you'll see in a minute, represented in mystical terms 7 times 7. And that represented in the Kabbalist or in the Zohar 49 gates of impurity that had to be passed through before Israel could receive the Torah. And there were 49 gates of impurity that all of them were in some way or another connected with idolatry. And it's 7 times 7, therefore it's the complete completion. In the Passover and in on the Feast of First Fruits, again, as this wave offering was made, which we'll see in a minute, at the exact time it was being made, Jesus Christ was, and it was being made in an elaborate ceremony in the temple, Jesus Christ was being resurrected from the dead. So he was the completion of the Feast of First Fruits. As death was abolished by Christ's death, as captivity was led captive by his going down in the grave and coming back, as the cross had become now our tree of life, servitude has become our freedom. The bread of affliction has become our bread of life. Remember, I gave you this quote a couple years ago from the Nag Hammadi Library. It was from the Gospels, like one of the Gospels of Philip. And it was the words of Christ that as he was explaining to the disciples the meaning of the cross. He said, I did not succumb to them as they had planned. I did not die in reality, but in appearance, lest I be put to shame by them. For my death, which they think happened, in reality happened to them, in their error and in their blindness. Since they nailed their man unto their death, it was another, their father, who drank the gall and the vinegar. It was another upon whom they placed the crown of thorns, and I laughed at their ignorance. Now you can see why that was excised in early councils, because unless you understand the scapegoat and understand the twins, the Son of Man, Son of God, then this would be pure blasphemy. This would be the thing that Nikos Kazantzakis, the last temptation, and everything. I mean,
where did you say that was located?
It's in the Nag Hammadi Library, and I think it's in the Gospel of Philip. On this Feast of First Fruits, they brought many, many offerings, silver, sacrifice of joyousness. They were not only at liberty, but they were encouraged to offer according to the blessing that God had given each. It was a time in which the coffers were filled in the temple. Now, at the same time as Christ was being taken off the cross and to the tomb by Joseph of Arimathea and Nicodemus, both of whom were members of the Sanhedrin, remember, a noisy crowd. Another thing was taking place very near Golgotha, just across the little dealy. A noisy throng followed the delegates from the Sanhedrin outside the city and across the brook Kedron. They emerged in a field across Kedron, which had been marked or set aside for this purpose. As we read earlier, the law had said, "You shall bring a sheaf of the first fruits of your harvest unto the priest. He shall wave it before Jehovah to be accepted for you. On the morrow after the Sabbath, the priest shall wave it." Now, this is taking place. Well, this Passover sheaf or omen was to be accompanied by a burnt offering, a he lamb without blemish of the first year. Until this was done, no more thing could be eaten or offered in the land. The omer was reaped in public the day before it was offered. The crowd gathered around the elders, who took care that it was done according to tradition. The spot where the first sheaf was to be reaped was marked off by the Sanhedrin on the 14th, at the same time the Passover lamb was being crucified or shorn or killed. The Sanhedrin sent a delegate to this particular small field and tied a tie or a string around the bundle that was to be offered. So it was sanctified by a particular area and then further sanctified on that particular day. Remember, we've talked about moving towards the ultimate sanctification. The barley had to be grown in an ordinary field. It had to be grown in the land of Israel, not in a garden, not in an orchard. The soil could never have been manured, nor it could have even once been artificially watered.
Can you go back through that one more time?
The barley had to be grown in an ordinary field in the land of Israel, not in a garden, not in an orchard. The soil could not be manured, nor it could it be artificially watered in any way. The field was plowed in the autumn and sowed exactly 70 days before Passover. Just as the sun went down, remember Christ had to be in the tomb before the sun went down, just as they were able to look up and see three stars, and the new day officially began, and the day was the beginning of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, so he was buried in this instant. Just as the sun went down, three men, each with a sickle and a basket, set to work. And they were, at this time, they were rolling the stone. And remember how these stones, remember? They were carved out of the same place that the cave was. And there was a groove made at an angle of like 15 to 10 degree angle. And it was a huge, huge stone. Weighed thousands of pounds, and it was not, it wasn't a circle, but it was kind of semi-curved, and then it was cut out of the rock, and then shims were put under it so that it couldn't, so it was there. And then when they had done anointing, when they had finished anointing the Christ, the Messiah, the dead, and they hit that shim and the stone rolled in front of the grave. And just as the stone rolled in front of the grave, the three men were cutting the sheaf. Three men had a sickle and a basket, and they set to work. And they had to ask, the leader of this delegation had to ask the bystanders these three questions, and then it had to be witnessed. And it was a joyous, joyous time, because it's hard for us to imagine this. Because to imagine it, if we had a particular ceremony and if it wasn't done right, then you couldn't eat anymore. Then if it was done right, you could eat and have a big feast. Well, anyway. The first question, has the sun gone down? And everybody yelled, yeah. It was a big, thousands of people screaming and yelling. And the guys raised up the sickle and said, with this sickle. And I said, yeah. Into this basket, yeah. On this holy day, yeah. Shall I reap? Do it! Stone rolls. Having all the questions answered, yes, they cut down the sanctified barley. The The stalks were brought to the temple. They were thrashed with canes so as not to injure the grain, then parched in a pan perforated with holes so that each grain was touched by fire, and then finally exposed to the wind. The corn was then ground and passed through 13 sieves, each closer than the other, until a flour was sufficiently fine so that when the treasurer plunged his hand into the flour, none would adhere to his hand. As those that 13-sieve process was going on, Christ was going down through the gates of hell. Nothing could touch, nothing of the first fruit offering could adhere to flesh. Then it was prepared in one omer, 5.1 pints, was then offered in the temple on that first of the first fruit. And it was just as this, it was the beginning of the day, so it was right after sunset on the morrow after the Sabbath, which would have been the exact same time that Christ was being resurrected out. It was, the omer was mixed with oil and a handful of frankincense, and then waved before the Lord. And then the remainder of that was used to feed the priests. Now, we've talked about this before, but just as ourselves also, which have the first fruits of the Spirit, even we ourselves groan within ourselves, waiting for the adoption to wit the redemption of our body. Christ says that now we are the first fruits. Okay, now on the second evening of Passover, there begins the counting of the Omer, that is, the counting of the 49 days after the sheaf of barley has been offered. The first counting begins at a late hour, since the omer was reaped and prepared only at night. Okay? You got all that in your mind? Now let's go on to something new. You've all heard all that before. Let's talk about barley for a minute. Why was this of barley?
Seen a picture of barley.
Well, you had barley soup. It's those little brown, remember?
I never ordered that.
Isn't it like a rougher type of wheat?
Yeah, it's
coarser, bigger.
Yeah, it's a lot bigger. But the purpose of the barley in the time of the Bible, Old and New Testament, it was grown as food mainly for horses and asses. Food for the beasts. And that's, if you're writing scriptural notes, you can go to 1 Kings 4, verse 28. And it was the food of the extremely poor, the poor of the poor, the offscoring.
Why not just grow regular wheat? Why trifle with barley? Does it grow quicker, faster?
Well, it's first of all, the things are bigger, and it doesn't taste very good, but it's bigger and animals like it. And it's therefore more efficient in terms of weight per acre. It's what Ruth 8. Let's go to Ruth 2. Remember, we're getting ready for Pentecost. Remember, the book of Ruth is read at Pentecost. Joshua judges Ruth. Boaz is showing favor to Ruth, but But the favor he's showing her is he's letting her reap the barley field, the gleanings of the barley. So much for prosperity preaching. Boaz is Christ and Ruth is the bride. Verse 15, when she was risen to glean, Boaz commanded his young men, saying, let her glean even among the sheaves, and reproach her not, and let fall also some of the handfuls of purpose for her, and leave them, that she may glean them, and rebuke her not. So she gleaned in the field until even, and beat out that she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. Now, I believe this took place in the Feast of First Fruits. Getting ready for the Feast of Pentecost in a little while. Then it's better stuff. Okay? I want to show you something else. Go to 2 Kings 4. Starting verse 38. And Elisha came again to Gilgal, and there was a dearth in the land, and the sons of the prophets were sitting before him. And he said unto his servant, set on the great pot and seethe pottage for the sons of the prophets. And one went out into the field to gather herbs, and found a wild vine, and gathered thereof some wild gourds, his lap full, and came and shred them into the pot of pottage, for they knew them not. And they poured out for the men to eat, and it came to pass as they were eating of the pottage, they cried out and said, O thou man of God, there is death in the pot. And they could not eat thereof. But he said, then bring meal. And he cast it into the pot, and he said, pour out for the people that they may eat. And there was no harm in the pot. Now what's going on here is there was an unclean food, a forbidden food, in this pot.
There's death in the pot?
Strange vine or a wild vine?
It was Levitically, legally unclean, which to them meant death. And he put meal into it of some sort, which I think was probably barley, and it became, there was no harm in the pot. Now, the Talmud says, it says here in a little bit that there's 100, but the Talmud says that they were the 100 leaders, they were leaders. Oh, let me go on. And there came a man from Baal-shalisha and brought the man of God bread of the first fruits, 20 loaves of barley and full ears of corn in the husk thereof. And he said, give unto people that they may eat. And his servitor said, what should I set before 100 men? And he said again, give the people that they may eat, for thus saith the Lord, they shall eat and shall leave thereof. So he set it before them, and they did eat, and he left thereof according to the word of the Lord. Now, it was just a little bit of food. The Talmud says there were 2,100 people here. And so it was the duplication of the feeding of the 5,000. But in the 5,000, here there are 20. What?
And that's the meaning of what was left over each time Christ did it. Well, the idea that you eat the bread of life, and it's not bread that disappears because you eat it. In fact, there's more left after you eat it.
Yeah, but it's also what's called the bread of servitude in the law. And it means here that those were acting as the servants took from what little bit there was, and those that were acting as the servants were all filled with abundance. Okay? Now it's barley. Keep that in mind for what this subject is about. Okay, now go to John 6.
And it's verse 3.
Yeah.
First John.
John 6. Verse Well, let's just start at the beginning. One. After these things, Jesus went over the Sea of Galilee, which is the Sea of Tiberias. And he just got through saying, if you remember, he said, "You search the Scriptures, for in them you think you find principles of eternal life. But they are they which testify only of me, and you won't come unto me." Okay? And then he says, "I receive not honor from men," and all that whole speech. A great multitude followed him because they saw his miracle, which he did on them that were diseased. And Jesus went up into a mountain, and there he sat with his disciples. And the Passover, a feast of the Jews, was nigh. Now, the reason Christ rose Lazarus from the dead just before, you know, at another Passover, just when the Passover was nigh, is because for the 30 days previous to Passover, if you remember, on the 15th of Adar, they started, and it was supposed to be the time in which questions were asked openly. All the preparations were being done only for the Passover, for the first 15 days. Then the second 15 days, you were supposed to live what you learned. And you lived what you learned by doing all these wild things, like painting the whitest sepulchers so you wouldn't step over them, and you know, and doing all of the things that were necessary for the preparation of the Passover. So here Christ is giving them the lesson of first fruits, which is part of Passover. During this period, the Passover was nigh, the word would give the implication that it's almost said the Passover was at the half. In other words, it was the 15 days when custom had it that they were to learn the Passover by experience. Remember in the book, and we say a feast of Passover? Every time when it says, and we say a feast of Passover, it means that you understand the thing described was Passover. Well, here Jesus is giving an object lesson. And he's saying, on this feeding of the 5,000, I mean, my God, if he wanted the 5,000, I mean, he could snap his fingers and the 5 billion would be fed. He doesn't care about that. He doesn't care about feeding the 6 jillion. He cares about you eating and understanding the Passover and the first fruits and all of these other massive feasts. And so this is the object lesson of the first feast of first fruits. You got it? And the Passover, a feast of the Jews, was nigh. And when Jesus then lifted up his eyes and saw a great company come unto him, he saith unto Philip, "Whence shall we buy bread that these may eat?" And he said, this he said to prove him or test him. Now, I wish Doug were going to kick his ass between his... I mean, that's all I'm doing with you is to test you. For he himself knew what he would do. And Philip answered him, 200 pennyworth of bread is not sufficient for them, that every one of them may take a little. One of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, saith unto him, "There is a lad here which hath 5 barley loaves and 2 small fishes, but what are they among so many?" And Jesus said, "Make the men sit down." Now again, in all of the Hebrew thing, the idea of sitting down is you've ceased from your labors. You have to sit down, not only physically, but you have to sit down in your mind.
Yeah, you've come to the end of something. You just, it's less like, you know, might as well sit down.
Now, I don't care if it's something you don't understand. I don't care if you have doubt. I don't care if you have bullshit. I don't care what you have. Sit down. And he caused the men to sit down. There was much grass in the place. You can sit down at ease. So the men sat down in number about 5,000. Remember, we had 20 loaves with Elisha. Each one of the 20, according to the Talmud, fed 1,000. Here we have 5 loaves And each one of these five loaves of barley cakes will feed 1,000. So the men sat down in number about 5,000, and Jesus took the loaves, and when he had given thanks, he distributed to the disciples, and the disciples to them that were set down, and likewise of the fishes as much as they would. And when they were filled, he said unto his disciples, gather up the fragments that remain, that nothing be lost. Therefore they gathered them together and filled 12 baskets with the fragments of the 5 barley loaves, which remained over and above them that had eaten. Then those men which, when they had seen the miracle that Jesus did, said, this is of a truth that prophet which should come into the world. Now again, you got to get in your mind, Jesus didn't feed the 5,000 so that everybody could say, oh, he's a neat guy. He didn't want them to make him king of the world. That's the temptation that he rejected. He fed the 5,000 so that he would know that he possessed the thing that in the future Satan would test him by. There is no testing, there's no temptation within you unless you know that you possess it. This isn't first grade theology. That's why in order for you to be fully tested, you must know that you possess all things. Otherwise, your testing is meaningless. That's why I'm so hard on you. Now notice, the 12 disciples acted as the servants. They had 5 loaves. 5 loaves weren't enough to feed the 12 disciples. But when they were finished, there were 12 baskets remaining. That's the bread or the act or that which is remaining of the servitude. If you see that you're the servant, there will be abundance more than you can dream of. Get your head off of yourself, and there'll be more of whatever it is that you think you lack than you can dream of.
It's like the opposite of living a parent.
Right. All right. Do you understand the relationship? This barley cake was a direct reference to the first fruit. Jesus Christ was saying to them, if you eat of the first fruit offering, you shall have abundance. Therefore, he is in effect by saying in the barley cake, he is saying that they are eating, because it goes right on, if you don't eat my flesh, you know, man, how many left? He had 5,000, he just fed. You go over here to chapter 6, verse 66, which is interesting, 666. From that time, many of his disciples went back and walked no more with him, because he just said, I am the bread you have to eat. 12 were left. 4,888 left him. Jesus said, big deal. He's showing them the meaning of the first fruits as a living example, which is what you must do in your Bible studies.
So when he said you must eat this bread, and he was saying he was the first fruit offering, but also that you, to partake of the first fruit offering, it was reserved to God and the priest, wasn't it? The thing that we read from Leviticus. Yeah. So that in order to eat that, you had to be in that place also.
Amen. Okay, now let's go to Judges chapter 7. We haven't gotten to the good stuff yet.
This is pretty good.
It's kind of chilly. Yeah. Chilling.
I like that.
7.
Judges. Gideon. Hey.
I'll bet this is going to be worth
Gideon.
Out of the Haggadah, I wondered about this.
No. All right. Gideon is this off scoring himself, and then he's hiding out. Yeah. He's doing everything wrong. And he chooses, God tells him to get an army, and so he gets an army. He says, God, that's too big. So he tells him that it ends up 300 men. And they're going to defeat Amalek, or the Midianites. Remember, the Midianites and Amalek are the same. We just got through fighting Amalek at Purim.
Here he is coming back.
Huh?
Keeps coming back.
Yeah. So now, there's about 600 jillion Midianites. I mean, they're all over the fucking place. Yeah. They're like the Buckners.
Major five.
That's what Custer said about the Sioux.
Look at all this stuff.
Buckerites. Look at all those Bucker Indians.
The expression Buckaroos.
Okay. Go to verse 9. And it came to pass the same night that the Lord said unto him, Arise, get thee down unto the host, for I have delivered it into thine hand. But if thou fear to go down, go with Phurah, thy servant. Go down to the host, and thou shalt hear what they say. And afterward shall thine hands be strengthened to go down unto the host. Then went he down with Phurah, his servant, unto the outside of the armed men that were in the host. And the Midianites and the Amalekites and all the children of the east lay along in the valley like grasshoppers for multitude. And their camels were without number as the sand by the seaside for multitude. We're talking about a lot of Midianites. And this is the defeat of the Midianites is incredibly important. And when Gideon was come, behold, there was a man that told a dream unto his fellow. This was a soldier, and they were talking, and Gideon overheard him. And when Gideon was come, behold, there was a man that told a dream unto his fellow, and said, Behold, I dreamed a dream. And lo, a cake of barley bread tumbled into the host of Midian, and came unto a tent, and smote it, that it fell, and overturned it. That tent lay along. And his fellow servant answered and said, This is nothing save the sword of Gideon, the son of Joash, a man of Israel. For into his hand hath God delivered Midian and all the host. Now, this was on a night of Passover. Midian was destroyed by a barley cake. And it came to pass at midnight. This is when you read it. And it was in the same, this was the first fruit offering, was the barley cake. You understand?
To understand the first fruit
offering. To understand the first fruit offering is the defeat of all of the flesh.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
In 15, where it says, and
well, let me, I'm going to.
Gideon understood he worshiped.
Yeah, I'm going to read it.
Giving the spirit of Pentecost.
Huh?
Worshiped.
No.
That's very really good.
And it was so when Gideon heard the telling of the dream, that was that night, and the interpretation thereof, that was that night. When you hear the meaning of the Feast of First Fruit, you worship. You can do nothing else. And returned to the host of Israel. Into the host of Israel, and said, Arise, for the Lord hath delivered into your hand the host of Midian. And my function is to, the same thing as the role of Gideon here, to tell you that the God of the universe, the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, has delivered Midian into your hand. You own all things. Because of the barley cake, the first fruit offering. Well, anyway, then you can read it later and find out how it... But I promise you, Gideon won. All right.
What are the Midians a type of?
Flesh. Malak, all of Midian are Amalek.
He even uses grasshoppers and the sand of the sea.
Go to Ezekiel 4. Ezekiel chapter 4. Thou also, son of man, take thee a tile and lay it before thee and portray upon it the city, even Jerusalem, and lay siege against it and build a fort against it and cast a mount against it. Set the camp also against it, and set battering rams against it round about. Moreover, take thou unto thee an iron pan, and set it for a wall of iron between thee and the city, and set thy face against it, and it shall be besieged. And thou shalt lay siege against it. This shall be a sign to the house of Israel. Now we are in a position where we have the voice of prophecy as a body here, and we must do this same thing in the Spirit to those that name the name of Christ. Well, Doug had a meeting today with his church down here, and the guy said, I won't have you in my church. You're a threat to everything I believe in. We got a letter from Grace Presbytery, which is the Pope of the Presbyterian Church. They said, none of you are permitted in any Presbyterian church for the Dallas Project. Now, one of the reasons we're doing the Dallas Project, I mean, is no less than this. Moreover, take unto thee an iron pan, etc. That this shall be a sign to the house of Israel. Now, only Doug has to do the next part. Lie thou also upon thy left side, and lay the iniquity of the house of Israel upon it. According to the number of days that thou shalt lie upon it, thou shalt bear their iniquity. For I have laid upon thee the years of their iniquity, according to the number of the days, 390 days, so shalt thou bear the iniquity of the house of Israel. In other words, he's doing it for 390 days, but that equals 390 years. And when thou hast accomplished them, lie again on thy right side. He lied on his left side for 390 days. Now he's going to turn over and lie on his left side. Lie again on thy right side, and thou shalt bear the iniquity of the house of Judah 40 days. I have appointed thee each day for a year. So for Israel, it was 390 days. For Judah, it was 40 days. You got it in your mind?
430.
Well, but it's... Yeah, no, but it's...
He just
laid there.
Okay.
Therefore thou shalt set thy face toward the siege of Jerusalem, and thine arm shall be uncovered, and thou shalt prophesy against it by his uncovered arm and by his presence. He didn't say a word. And behold, I will lay bands upon thee, and thou shalt not turn thee from one side to another, until Allah has ended the days of thy siege. In other words, he had to lie still in his own filth. Are you understanding me? Take thou also unto thee wheat and barley and beans and lentils and millet and fitches, and put them in one vessel, and make thee bread thereof according to the number of the days that thou shalt lie upon thy side, 390 days shalt thou eat thereof. And thy meat or food which thou shalt eat shall be by weight 20 shekels. A shekel is about a half an ounce. 20 shekels a day from time to time shalt thou eat of it. Thou shalt drink also water by measure, the sixth part of a hin. A hin is a gallon and a half, so the sixth part is sixth part of a gallon and a half. So it's, in a sense, the quart of water and 10 ounces of this stuff. You know, it's like subsistence level eating. We haven't gotten to the good part yet. Thou shalt drink also water by measure, the sixth part of a hin, from time to time thou shalt drink of it, and thou shalt eat it as barley cakes. It's the first fruit offering, but it's mixed. First of all, it's mixed with the fitches, the lentils, the beans, and the millet, but it's mixed by something far worse. And thou shalt eat it as barley cakes, and thou shalt bake it with dung that cometh out of man in their sight. As he baked it with his own dung in their sight. That's what he had to eat for 390 days. It was a barley cake, which was supposed to be the first fruit, the food of life, but it was mixed with the old life. Mixed with fitches and millet, all types of, and beans, all types of the world. It was mixed with wheat because they didn't understand the difference between Pentecost and Passover. Wheat is, you understand? But it was done as a barley cake. Now tell me that the church in the world isn't in this exact condition. And thou shalt eat it as barley cakes, and thou shalt bake it with dung that cometh out of man in their sight. And the Lord said, even thus shall the children of Israel eat their defiled bread among the Gentiles, whither I will drive them. You got it? You got the picture? Now go to Numbers 5. Verse 11. Now I know all you Bible scholars will remember that we've just studied this a few months ago, but just in case some of you may have forgotten. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, if any man's wife go aside and commit a trespass against him, and a man lie with her carnally, and it be hid from the eyes of her husband, and be kept close, and she be defiled, and there be no witnesses against her, neither she be taken with the manner. Hosea says, anytime you go any place for sustenance other than the Lord, you are committing adultery. You are the wife, the bride of Christ, in an adulterous condition. Because you've gone somewhere other than him, you've left your covering, going somewhere other than him for your sustenance. You understand you're an adulterer? Mm-hmm. And the spirit of jealousy come upon him, the husband, and he be jealous of his wife. And God says, I am jealous. I'm a jealous God. And she be defiled, or if the spirit of jealousy come upon him and he be jealous of his wife and she be not defiled. Either way, the following has to take place. Then shall a man bring his wife unto the priest, and he shall bring her offering for her, the tenth part of an ephah of barley meal.
How big is an ephah?
Oh, 2.5 pints, I think, but I forgot. You can look it up.
Okay, it's relatively small.
Yeah. He shall pour. Now, you remember in the first fruit offering that was made by fire, there was frankincense and oil mixed with it. And this is in the cup of jealousy. This is the cup of wrath that Jesus drank in the Garden of Gethsemane. He didn't eat the first fruit offering with this, in this case, because he was the first fruit offering. And he, as the first fruit offering, he sweated. Well, anyway. Then shall a man bring his wife unto the priest, and he shall bring her offering for her, the tenth part of an ephah of barley meal. He shall pour no oil upon it, nor put frankincense thereon, for it is an offering of jealousy. an offering of memorial, bringing iniquity to remembrance. Well, that's enough. I don't want to go into all this. But the cup of wrath or the cup of jealousy, which we've studied, which is part of the waters. You remember the three kinds of waters for jealousy, leprosy, and touching the dead body. This, then, the cup of jealousy, the idea is, because the barley cake is there, it means that you've gone someplace else other than the first fruit offering for your sustenance. You got it?
Yeah.
Okay, now let's get to the interesting stuff. Counting the Omer. Sefirat HaOmer, or the counting of the Omer. It's the injunction to count the 49 days from the morrow after the Sabbath. Remember, the morrow after the Sabbath is the eighth day. So again, we're back to the eight. It's the eighth day. If you're eating something that's not of the resurrection, you're eating something that's not of the first fruit. You're eating the barley cake mixed with your own dung. It's considered to be of the authority of the Torah. Now you got to understand, in rabbinic law there's two things. There's the authority of the Torah, or the Pentateuch, and there's rabbinic authority. Rabbinic authority is an invention that has to do only with synagogue Judaism. Christianity is synagogue Judaism. They're the same. Pentateuchal authority, is the only authority that we have. You got it? The counting of the days of the Omer cannot legally take place by this book if there was no first fruit offering. There cannot be a first fruit offering if there is no temple. Therefore, Pentecost is illegal. Anytime, according to the law of God, any time that you partake of Pentecost without the fullness of the first fruit offering, you are, as Ezekiel, eating the barley cake mixed with your own dung. Now this is the testimony of the modern charismatic movement.
When you partake of Pentecost without the first fruit offering.
Amen. You understand me?
Mm-hmm. It's there in the position of Jerusalem, like when Ezekiel was talking about it.
Yeah,
all the stuff that's mixed with Gentiles.
Yeah, it's like flesh is mixed with it, so you can't partake.
Well, but hear me. No. Hear me. Pentecost for us is coming up the 26th, 27th. We're celebrating it. Unless we celebrated in knowledge, remember the offering or the altar also means to understand. To build the altar means to understand the altar. To build the sacrifice means to understand it. Unless you understand what I've just said to you tonight about the first fruit offering, then to partake of the activity of Pentecost is illegal, because there was no first fruit offering made this year, and it couldn't be because there's no temple. It's like to the Jews and the Christians who are waiting for Messiah to come, how in the hell, by the law, they have to prove that he was of the tribe of Judah. How are they going to do it? All of the legal records to prove it have been gone since AD whoever knows when. There is no way that they can have a Messiah by their own word. There is no way that Jesus Christ can come back for them by their own fundamentalism. There is no way they can partake of the gifts of the Holy Spirit by their own Phariseeism. You may not understand me, but it's biggie.
Here's a clear. The thing I'm thinking about is this guy that I talked today at the church was offended by the fact that we had gone out, you know, just our Bible studies, that we had gone out of the structure of, he used the phrase, the institutional church, at least three times in the conversation. And I mean, in essence, what he was saying is that we weren't recognizing rabbinical authority. I mean, that's...
Yeah, rabbinical authority is nil. Our only authority is Torah. Now, the 49 days themselves are also known as simply Sephira, S-E-F-I-R-A-H, which means the counting. I mean, it's like everything in the Jewish heart and mind and soul and being is connected with this counting of the Omer. Because if not, and the reason is something that we've never studied. As I said, you could not forget the count. If you fail to count for one complete day, you cannot continue and therefore cannot participate in Pentecost. In order not to forget the count, they made elaborate calendars that were kept in the homes. Probably. Now, from an unknown time, back in the mystery ages, back in the mist of time, just like the egg in the Passover plate, from an unknown time, the days of Omer began to take on the character under the law of semi-mourning. During the counting of the Omer, marriages were prohibited, haircutting was prohibited, and the use of musical instruments was banned. Mourning was associated with an ancient plague where the disciples of a famous rabbi died because they did not treat each other with love. And there was a plague that hit them. The Talmud alludes to this being a time of suffering to prepare your heart only for Pentecost. Now, think about it in terms of what happened. On Passover, they escaped. There was joy for a brief period of time, and then there was hunger and thirst. And then the complaint started. From the Feast of First Fruits until the Feast of Pentecost, or just about the Feast of Pentecost, there was only suffering.
Yeah, culminating in the golden calf and all that kind of stuff. Before the law was given, was it not?
That's right. Now, during the latter part of the count, remember the 49, 7 times 7, the day after the 7 times 7 is when the Pentecost is, when the Spirit or seed of Christ was shed on all flesh. During the latter part of the count, and different days are assigned depending on different theories and different, and it's all screwed up, there was a minor festival held. And the festival's name is Lag Bar Omer, L-A-G space B-A-R dash Omer. Until that feast occurred, Israel was in a state of suffering. The Lag Bar Omer and its Omer and its origins are also shrouded in mystery as to its origin and purpose. According to some rabbinic sources, it was the day that the plague left. In other words, the day that The plague, remember, was because the disciples did not love and respect each other. The Kabbalist view that, and the Zohar says that the purpose of the suffering was, it was the stressing of the idea of the spiritual suffering as the only way to prepare for Pentecost. In a legal term, this day, Lag Bar Omer, is defined as a helula, which means it's a festive occasion. Bonfires are lighted, there's a huge party, and it's the day, according to tradition, that the manna begin to fall in the wilderness. Now, other explanations. Romans could not, you know, there's all kinds of arguments about this. In ancient tradition, in the Roman Empire, Romans could not marry in the month of May because it was the month of Lemuria. And it's when it's the time, the 1 month, or 32 days, really, when souls of the departed return to wander over the earth and disturb the living. Now, the final, the thing that was happened, in fact, the origin of what we know as funeral rites were magical rites that were done after the death in order to keep this from taking place on the month of Lemuria. In other words, people started having these elaborate funerals and sending people and blessing them. Not because they wanted them to go to God, because they didn't want them to come back and mess up their month. Now, also the ancient Germans and the ancient Anglo-Saxon tribes, during on May Day and for these days of in the month of Lemuria, they shot arrows into the sky, the beginning on May Day. May Day was the celebration because they tried to shoot at these demons. Now, this Lag Bar Omer, I am certain of, was the day of the ascension, and that's why it's the celebration.
Yeah, the demon had come back and was bothering.
Now go to Luke 24. Well, let me just give it to you. You can read it in your own time. It's Luke 24:49, Mark 16:19. And Acts 1, 6 to 11. Now, you remember when we studied Pentecost, that the counting of the Omer was as, it had the same idea as one that you were totally and completely in love with has been away, and you're counting the Omer, counting the days, counting the hours or weeks until you will see him or her again. That's the idea of the counting of the Omer. You were betrothed on the Feast of Passover. You were empowered for the betrothal on the Feast of Pentecost, and the wedding takes place. The wedding feast takes place on the Feast of Tabernacles. Now somehow, you've got to get this message back to the people in your groups. You've got to get them the excitement of what the counting of the Omer means. Now, don't be surprised if there's suffering then in the first days, the first part of the counting of the Omer. Don't be surprised if you become a sign and a wonder. Don't be surprised if you think, as Ezekiel, that every you're.
Are you done as eating the ship?
Yeah. Everybody understand?
Yeah, that's me.
I knew always that the ascension was something, but I could never put it together until I did it a couple of years ago, but I didn't want to talk about it yet.
Yeah, he says one is who's come back from the dead during this time period.
Demon walking around troubling people. Please go away and stay away. mean, that's even evidenced by his coming back as a way of affirming that it's worked for him to be away.
This is really important stuff. I hope you've grokked some of it. Midian is destroyed on the Passover night by a barley cake. And it came to pass at midnight.
I think about that great line that J.W. gave us tonight. He talked about, I'm waiting for him to come back. It's going to be great when he comes back. And that's really easy to do because as long as he's coming back, he's not here now and I can do whatever I want. Till he comes back.
He's here. There's nothing new under the sun.
That's just the idea of God is what it takes to properly count the Omer. Desiring that we would count the Omer. But
yeah. With that attitude, the idea of what it means to count. I mean,
when did we start? The day after Passover, Monday. So it would be like 49 days from.
Well, I mean, don't worry about.
We won't get that specific, but I mean, typically, that's when we started, and our Passover would be the last. I mean, our.
Pentecost is the 50th day, and the 26th of May is when or 27th is when we're studying or doing it.
But the ascension came
10 days before that, or so thereabouts.
That thing about the 49 gates of uncleanness, seven sevens of days, and the days being evil, God's at all.
Take it big, guy.